Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. In this series, Swami Nikhilanand tells the Sri Krishna Leelas of the Bhagavatam from his appearance and birthday celebration in Gokul up until Govardhan Leela when he was 7 years of age. In addition, he explains the effect of listening to Sri Krishna Leelas and how meditating on the Leelas is an important part of the path of bhakti.
This is the second one-week series that I'm doing on the Bhagavatam. Last year, I talked to you for 7 days on the introductory philosophy of the Bhagavatam. So in that series, I had explained what is the Bhagavatam, why is the Bhagavatam important, what is the essence of the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. So along those lines, I'd covered some topics like the knowledge of the Bhagavatam is actually the explanation of the Vedas, and it's the essence of the Ved, Upanishad, Brahma Sutra. Ved is the foundation scripture of Sanatan Dharma. So I explained to you that although Ved is eternal and has all the knowledge, there's nothing that isn't in Ved. Everything we need is in Ved. Yet, muhyanti yat surayah, even Brahma, who is the first one to receive the knowledge of the Vedas from Sri Krishna, even he, as he's speaking the verses of the Vedas, out of his four mouths are coming the mantras of the Vedas when Krishna gave him the Ved, yet he didn't know what he was saying. What was the meaning of Ved? Even Brahma could not correctly understand the meaning of Vedas. So, the Puran is to help us understand the meaning of Ved. Puran means the 18 Puranas. Out of those 18 Puran, the Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavat, is the Mahapuran. It's the most important, the greatest of those Puranas. So the Puranas are also given to Brahma and to the world through Brahma, so that we can understand the knowledge, what is in Ved. So with the help of Puranas and with Sri Krishna's grace, Brahma can understand what is the meaning of the mantras of the Vedas. So he gives that knowledge of Ved to the rishis of the earth planet, and eventually it's produced in a book form. But the Puranas are also there. So Puranas are also eternal. Not only Ved is eternal, Puran is also eternal. Itihas is eternal, means Mahabharat. So the Bhagavatam is an eternal scripture, which is the explanation of the Vedas, and in fact, the essence of the Ved and Upanishads. Whatever is in there, the essence of that is in the Bhagavatam. Arthoyam Brahma Sutranam. Vedavyasji writes, because he's the author of the Brahma Sutra, the Vedanta, he writes that my explanation of the Brahma Sutra is the Bhagavatam. There have been great long Sanskrit explanations written by Jagat Gurus over the last thousands of years. Big, thick volumes of explanation on what is the meaning of Brahma Sutra by Vedavyas. So Vedavyasji says, no need. I already wrote the explanation of Brahma Sutra. It's Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavat is tops in terms of knowledge. Even with respect to the Gita, we had many Gita classes here over the years. It is said that where the Gita finishes, the Bhagavatam begins. And I explained in quite a bit of detail what that means or why that is said. basically you can think that whatever is in Gita is included in the Bhagavatam already, plus more. So what's more is that the Gita only speaks generally about what is our ultimate divine goal. Gita says you want to attain God, you want to get something divine, divine knowledge, divine happiness, freedom from Maya, freedom from rebirth. You want to get free from all kinds of suffering. So to do that, you have to attain God. Gita goes that far. But Bhagavatam goes farther, saying that just saying we want to attain God is not enough. How do you want to attain God? Do you just want to get liberation and merge into God, but then you won't experience anything? Or do you want to get the divine vision of God in His almighty form? Or do you want to take part in His loving leelas, like the saints who associate with Krishna get to? Gita doesn't go into that much detail about those things. In fact, it doesn't go into any detail about those things. It just speaks in general about attaining God. But the Bhagavatam goes beyond and says you want to attain the divine love of God, then you will get the topmost thing. So the knowledge of Bhagavatam is top. There's nothing beyond the Bhagavatam in terms of knowledge. There are some other secrets revealed by saints with respect to very intimate topics like who is Radharani. Things like that is revealed in the Rasik Varni, the writings of great saints who are at that level, who have attained the divine love of Radha Krishna. But as far as the eternal scriptures of Sanatan Dharma, Bhagavatam is top. But Bhagavatam is not only top in terms of tattvajnan, in terms of knowledge. It's also top in terms of ras. Pibat bhagavatam ras malayam muhurho bhuvi bhavuka muhurho rasika bhuvi bhavuka pibat bhagavatam rasamalayam. Bhagavatam is rasam alayam. It is the abode or the residing place of ras. Ved says raso vaisah. God is ras. Ras means like the essence of bliss. Bliss means perfect happiness. And the essence of perfect happiness is ras, divine love. So what is that ras? Well, that is God. So Ved says that. But here Veda Vyasji is writing when he says rasamalayam. This is the third shloka of the Bhagavat. He says this Bhagavat is rasamalayam. So Ved tells that God is ras. But that ras is not in the Vedas. Ved is like a dry knowledge. Just an intellectual explanation of who is God, what is God, all the phenomena, material phenomena, divine phenomena. It's described in a dry intellectual way in Vedas and Upanishad, same in Brahma Sutra, same in Gita. It's very dry the way it's presented. Of course, it's divine, but it's not, there's no ras in it. So that ras, when we're saying God is ras, where is that ras kept? In the Bhagavatam. Bhagavat means of God. So in other words, Bhagawan himself is in the Bhagavatam. Shri Krishna himself is in the Bhagavatam. So he is ras. It means he is the nectar of divine love. And that nectar is in the Bhagavatam. See, Veda Vyasji had revealed all the knowledge already. Muhyatya Jnana Sagare. But Bhagavat Mahatmya says, Veda Vyasji was still unsettled. He was feeling restless, like his job was not done. He had taken avatar, he's a descendant of God, and he had taken avatar on this earth planet for the purpose of revealing or reproducing all of the Sanskrit scriptures. So he had reproduced Vedas, Upanishads in their totality, taught them to his disciples. The Darshan Shastras, he had written Brahma Sutra, the other 17 Puranas, the Mahabharata, the Gita. Imagine one individual producing all that knowledge, 100,000 mantras in Ved, 400,000 shlokas in Puran, another 100,000 shlokas in Mahabharata, 25,000 more in Valmiki Ramayana, which he reproduced. All of that, and yet he was feeling like his work wasn't done. So Naradji comes to him. Naish karmyam apyatyut bhava varjitam na shobhate jnanamalam niranjanam. Naradji says, Vedavyasji, that knowledge may be the highest knowledge, but if it is bereft of that ras of Shri Krishna's leelas, then na shobhate. It's missing something. It hasn't reached the highest thing yet. That knowledge is bereft of ras, then in fact, see later on in the Bhagavatam, remember in the beginning, Sutji answered a question by Shaunakadik, who had said, you know, Sutji Maharaj, you know all the Puranas, all the Vedas, so please answer one question for us. You see, it's Kaliyug, and the souls of Kaliyug, they live a very short time compared to other Yugas. And as long as they live, they don't remain healthy. Their body gives them a lot of pain and problems. Their mind gives them a lot of problems because the mind of the souls living in Kaliyug is very distracted. They have trouble focusing. They don't like to undertake too many difficult things. They want things to be easy for them. He's describing the souls of Kaliyug. And he says, on top of this, how can they know what is the right path? There are so many paths described in the scriptures and by saints. So what is the easiest path for the souls of Kaliyug to follow? So he answered, Savai punsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radho kshaje ahai tukya vyavahita ya bhakti purushottame. He says, selfless bhakti is the easiest path, the only supreme dharma, the supreme path for all the souls of Kaliyug is selfless devotion, selfless bhakti, which means devotion with a desire to receive that ras, not with a desire to, you know, get any worldly thing from God. That is the supreme path, and that is the only easiest path for all the souls of Kaliyug. This was in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. And in the very end, in the second last chapter, Sutji, concluding things in his discussion with Shaunakadik, after he's related the whole Bhagavat to them, he again says, re-quoting what Naradji had told Vedavyas, Naish karmyam apyatyuta bhava varjitam na shobhate jnanamalam niranjanam. And he goes on to say, Mrisha girasta hyasati rasat katha nakat Yate Yad Bhagavan Adhokchaja. and Vibhriyan Nadhirah. He says, Shaunakadik Paramahans, that knowledge which is bereft of the nectar, the sweet nectar of Krishna's loving leelas, he says, it is asat katha. Asat. Sat means right, true. Asat means not right. So he says it doesn't matter how high that knowledge is. It may be the knowledge of Vedas, Upanishads, Gita, Brahma Sutra. Here, through these words, Vedavyas is condemning all of those scriptures. Not condemning in this way that the knowledge is wrong. No, it's not wrong. But just like you can say, let's say you have a diamond in one hand, and in the other hand you have a clump of dirt. So you could say, ye mithya hai, or ye satya hai. So it means this diamond is the real thing, and this dirt I have in my other hand, well, it's not fake, it's real. But compared to the diamond, it's mithya, meaning what is its value compared to the diamond? So compared to the value of the diamond, this clump of earth is mithya. It's fake. It's of no use. So here, Shaunakadik Paramahans are hearing from Sutji that all this great knowledge of our Upanishads, Vedanta, Brahma Sutra, everything, Gita, since it is bereft of the ras of Shri Krishna's leelas, so he says it's asat. He also says it's asati, which means vyabhicharini. It's not faithful to Shri Krishna, because it, leaving aside the wonderful, rejoicing leelas of Shri Krishna, and just getting all tied up in all the intellectual theory, that doesn't appeal to the mind of a devotee. Vibhriyan Nadhira. He says the someone who has this knowledge, who is wise, he doesn't get involved in such intellectual theories. Although we have to understand enough knowledge. We need the right knowledge in order to practice the path. But the knowledge in itself is not an end. The knowledge is supposed to get us to the point where we desire to hear Krishna's leelas. And those leelas in their finest form are in the Bhagavatam. Veda Vyasji also told Shri Krishna's leelas in other Puranas also. Brahma Vaivart Puran has a lot of Krishna's leelas. They're there in many of the Puranas. But they're there in more of a reporting style. Those other Puran are not called Rasam Alayam. In other words, the ras of those leelas is not there. The description of the leela is there, but the actual ras, it's there in a very restricted way. But in the Bhagavatam, the actual ras of Krishna's leelas is there. So that is why Vedavyas was not satisfied, even though he had told all of many of the same leelas that are in Bhagavatam are told in other Puranas. Yet he wasn't satisfied. So Naradji told him, you have to write Bhagavatam where you explain all of Krishna's main leelas from his appearance to his disappearance in chronological order, which wasn't done in any other Puran, and keep the ras of those leelas, imbue the ras of those leelas in your telling in the Bhagavatam. So first Vedavyasji did bhakti to Shri Krishna, got the divine vision of Shri Krishna. Then he wrote Bhagavat. And as he told those leelas, he actually imbued the ras of Shri Krishna's leelas in his writing. Then he felt that he had accomplished what he had come here to do. And his own son, Shukdeoji, who already was a Gyani saint. He had all the knowledge of all the knowledges, and he himself was absorbed in the bliss of formless God. So he was already experiencing the bliss of God, yet he left his Nirvikalp Samadhi, his Brahmalin Samadhi. He left that state of divine absorbment. Why? To hear Krishna Leelas of the Bhagavatam. Imagine, he left Samadhi to go back to Shravan. Shravan comes, then you do Manan, you think about it. Then comes Nididhyasan, when you're starting to get absorbed in thinking about that thing. And then Samadhi, when you become completely absorbed. So he was already in that state of total absorbment in God. Why would he leave that state and come back to Shravan, which means to listen? Because in that state of divine absorbment, we call Samadhi, Brahmalin Samadhi, the bliss he was experiencing of formless God was eclipsed by the bliss of Sri Krishna's Leelas. When Vedavyasji's disciples came and found Shukadevji lying in the forest, they sang a verse of the Bhagavatam to him. And even though he couldn't hear a sound in this whole world, the ras of that shloka that they sang actually pierced his samadhi, entered into his samadhi, and he received that bliss of Sri Krishna's divine love, and it awakened him, it evoked his samadhi. And he wanted more, so he came back to the ashram of his father, Vedavyas, and he listened to and learned the whole Bhagavatam from him. So this establishes the greatness of the Bhagavatam, that not only does it exceed all other scriptures in terms of the knowledge it has and the way it presents that knowledge, reconciling all the theories and showing clearly what is the path to God, what is the easiest path to God, and what is the highest goal. Not only does it do that, but it also has that ras that even saints are looking for. It's there in the Bhagavatam, imbued in those Leelas of Sri Krishna. Now, in the Bhagavatam, it goes in chronological order, not just from Sri Krishna's appearance. It actually starts from the beginning of the universe. And it tells how God produced the universe, how after that was done, Brahma created our little Brahmand. And then once our Brahmand was created, what are the major events that took place, what form of God descended, and what did they do, and what great saints came, all in chronological order, in the first 9 skand of the Bhagavatam, in the first 9 cantos. Then in the 10th canto comes the description of Sri Krishna's appearance. And the reason that that comes after all the other description is because all of those other forms of God are included in the form of Sri Krishna. I explained that to you in the first part of this series. So Sri Krishna in his own self, whatever other descensions of God are explained in the Bhagavatam, they're all incorporated into Sri Krishna's avatar. It means they're all in him and they come with him. So he's called Purnavatar. All the forms of God are included in Sri Krishna's personality. And the bliss that Sri Krishna reveals while he's on this earth planet exceeds all other types of divine bliss. So in this series, what we're going to do is cover these Leelas of the Bhagavatam of the 10th canto from Sri Krishna's appearance going in chronological order. That's what we're going to do every day this week, every evening. We'll start from the beginning and I'll explain these Leelas to you. And the reason that I'm going to do that is that these Leelas are the means of doing devotion. When Sutji said to Shaunakadik Paramahans that the path for all the souls is to do bhakti, but how to do bhakti? So in Bhagavatam it's told, Tasmad Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Haririshvara Shrotavyah Kirtitavyascha Smartavyascha Chhatabhayam. Shukadevji Paramahansa says to Parikshit, these are the three main ways to do bhakti. Shravana bhakti, kirtana bhakti, and smarana bhakti. This is the most important thing, the practical part. Having the knowledge is important as well, but then we have to do bhakti. So in Bhagavatam, which is the scripture which reconciles all the knowledges, all the practices and paths. So Bhagavatam, if you say, ask Bhagavatam how to do bhakti, although in one place in Bhagavatam, there's Navadha bhakti described, 9 ways of doing bhakti. In another place, there's 25 ways of doing bhakti, 30 ways of doing bhakti. But Bhagavatam condenses, just says 3 ways is enough. Shravana bhakti, which means listening. Either listening to the philosophy, as you are right now, or listening to the leelas, as you will be in a minute when I start telling Krishna leelas. This is Shravana Bhakti, and it's one way of doing bhakti. Kirtana Bhakti means singing those same leelas, or singing the names of God. And Smarana means lovingly remembering God, either in silence. You can think about his leelas without singing them or without hearing someone else describe them. You can think about it in your own mind. Or while you're doing the kirtan, obviously you should be thinking about God. Otherwise, it's an empty chanting. It's an exercise of your voice. So we're supposed to be doing smaran of Sri Krishna's leelas or of his form while we're chanting. So the smarana means your mind is engaged in thinking of Krishna, understanding the philosophy, remembering his leelas. That's smarana. And then kirtan means singing from your voice. And shravana means listening to either the philosophy or to the leelas. So listening to the leelas, singing those leelas, and remembering and thinking about those leelas. That is how you do bhakti. Sutji explained to Shaunakadik Paramahans why this is important. Shrinvatam svakatham krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyanta sthohya bhadrani vidhunoti surit satam nashta prayeshva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyuttama shloke bhaktair bhavati naishthiki. A beautiful explanation of the effect of chanting Krishna's leelas or listening to them, and especially remembering them in your heart. So, Shrinvatam Swakatham Krishna. Now, after having received correct knowledge, that's why the first part of this Bhagavatam series, I focused on the knowledge part. Because the knowledge has to come first. We understand the value of attaining God. Why should we attain God? What do we want from God? Then comes the desire to do bhakti. Kind of like if you feel hungry, then you have a desire to eat. So the hunger comes from the knowledge. If you know the value, what will I get if I attain God? Then you have a desire to attain God. So if you have a desire, that means you're hungry. And if you're hungry, then you want to eat. So that wanting to eat, that means you want to do bhakti. You want to follow the path to get to God. So we need that knowledge. Then comes the desire to do bhakti. So it means the next thing that comes is a desire to hear Shri Krishna's leelas. So what happens when someone starts listening to those leelas? Their heart purifies. Vidhunoti. We have many impurities in our heart. All our past lives, all the thoughts we've had, all the actions we've done, many of them were wrong, negative, bad. All of that pollutes our heart. Many of the things we've done and thought in this life pollutes our heart. All of that is stored in here. And in the same heart, we want to receive God's grace. So first we have to clean that out, then God can come and sit in here. It's like if I called you for satsang, but we didn't have a room like this for you to sit. And I said, come and listen, I'm going to tell you something about God. And there was no place for you to sit. You would say, why did you call us all here for satsang? You didn't even prepare properly so we can all come and sit somewhere. In the same way, we want God, but where is God going to come? There's too much garbage in here. We have to clean that out. So how do we clean it out? Sudji says, listen to Krishna's leelas. Bring his leelas in here. Then that starts cleaning out all the worldly desires, worldly attachments, all the past pop that we've done. All of that gets vidhunoti. It gets cleaned out. And as that gets cleaned out, what happens is Krishna himself enters into your heart. So you can say his leelas enter into your heart and Krishna enters into your heart, and that gradually cleans everything out. And bhaktair bhavati naishthiki, you develop real bhakti through that. As the heart purifies just through listening to Krishna's leelas. Real bhakti means affinity. Affinity means like a melting of the heart for someone that you love. That happens for Krishna when you get real bhakti. And that develops through remembering his leelas. So this is the value of remembering the leelas. Yatha yathatma parimrijyate sau mat punya gatha shravana bhidhanai. Shri Krishna says to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that by listening to my pure divine leelas, what happens? Tatha tatha pasyati vastu sukshmam chakshuryathaivanjana samprayuktam. A person's heart is gradually purified and he more and more realizes the presence of Shri Krishna. So in the beginning, it's like a very faint feeling and probably a very faint affinity in the heart, but that feeling of love for Krishna intensifies. And the realization and experience that he's right here with you, that intensifies. How? Just by listening to and remembering his leelas. So before I start telling you Krishna leelas, I want to make sure of one more thing, that we all understand the purpose of this and how we're supposed to take it in our mind. Those leelas are never for intellectualizing. Intellectualizing means like some scholarly people, academics, they look at Krishna's leelas or Ram's leelas and then they ask, why? Why did this happen like this? And then they try to come up with a reason. Or they try to find allegorical meanings for the leelas. Allegorical meaning, let's say some scholar says, oh, Ayodhya didn't actually exist. Ayodhya is your own heart. So Ram is supposed to live in your heart. That's what it means he resides in Ayodhya. No, that's called namaparad. It's a spiritual transgression to allegorize God's leelas. It says in Ramayana, God himself, Ram himself, came on this earth planet and lived in a city called Ayodhya, the same city that's there today. So we don't need a scholar to give us any more meaning to it than that, other than it actually happened. Not that there aren't reasons behind everything God does, but it's beyond our understanding from where we are. Just like, imagine a three-year-old. If everything he sees his mother and father doing, he says, "Daddy, why did you do that? Mommy, why did you do that?" They can't explain every little thing to him. When he grows up and his intellect develops, then he can understand why his parents do what they do. And they could explain it to him at that point, but not when he's 3 years old. Similarly, if we keep asking, "Oh, why did Krishna do that? Why did he do that? Why did this happen? Why did that happen?" then we're actually missing the point of the leelas altogether, because those leelas, remember, they're rasamalayam. We're supposed to drink the ras of those leelas simply by remembering them. We're not meant to intellectually analyze it. That just, it's like, it removes the experience part altogether. You end up staying up in here instead of in here. So the leelas are meant to be taken in here. They're not meant to be analyzed up here. Brahma himself, even though he has a divine intellect, he did a leela with Sri Krishna to explain this very point to us, or make it obvious to us, that anyone could understand. See, Brahma became confused seeing a childhood leela of Krishna. Seeing that... Because he was thinking, "Oh, Krishna is Supreme God and he's on the earth planet. Let me go and see what is he up to." And he saw Krishna sitting with his Gwalbal friends, and the calves were overgrazing somewhere. And he saw them eating lunch together. And the manner of their eating lunch was like you would expect from a bunch of young boys. Talking, laughing, sharing food together. You know, it was just so, such a loving, intimate scene. But Brahma got confused, thinking that here I just saw Krishna actually take food out of the mouth of one of his friends and eat it. Would God do such a thing? It doesn't seem right. So he got confused. That is Krishna really God? Why is he acting in such a childlike way? And then he tried to test Krishna. But then it ended up being Brahma who got tested. And then he realized his mistake that, "Oh, I applied my intellect in Krishna's leelas. I asked why. Why is he doing that?" So he showed that if he can't understand Krishna's leelas with his intellect, then why should any ordinary soul make that attempt? When Parvati, at that time she was called Sati, when she and Shankarji, they came to have the darshan of Bhagwan Ram while he was in the jungle looking for Sita. Re vriksha parvatastha girigah nalata vayuna vijyamana ramoham vyakulatma dasharath tanayah shok shukrena dagdha bimboshti charunetri suvipula jaghana badhanagendra kanchi hasita kenanita mam hridayagatam ko bhavan ken drishta. Valmiki Ramayana. What did Sati see Ram doing? In separation from Sita, missing her so much, he was asking the mountains and the trees and the plants, "Have you seen my Sita? Kena drishta? Have you seen her? Did she walk by here? Which way did she go?" So Sati thought to herself, "Jo Brahma vyapak aj akal aniha अभेद सो की देह धारी. She says, but I'm confused. On one hand, Ram looks like an ordinary man to me. He's the son of a king. And he's grieving for the loss of his wife like an ordinary person would, or you can say even looking even more worldly than an ordinary person, because he's in so much grief that he doesn't even, you know, organize a proper search. He's just asking the trees and the mountains. So on one hand, I'm seeing that. And on the other hand, I'm seeing God Shiva, who I know is God, who's bowing down, doing namaskar to him and saying, oh, look at Supreme God, Ram. So is he God or is he an ordinary man? He says, as Parvati says, as far as I know, according to the description in the Vedas, God is omnipresent. Yet I see this Ram at one place. God is not attached to anything. Yet I see him grieving for the loss of his wife. So, I don't think he can be God. No, maybe he is. Oh, let me test him and find out. So she came, took the form of Sita, because actually Parvati herself and Sita are one. So Parvati came, Sati came and took the form of Sita, seeing where Ram and Lakshman were going to walk by. And as soon as Ram saw Sati sitting there in the form of Sita, he wasn't fooled one bit. He said, oh, Mataji, what are you doing sitting here all alone? Where is Shankar? Then she realized her mistake. She had applied her intellect in analyzing Ram's leelas. Bhakta hetu Bhagavan Prabhu Ram dhare utanu bhup kiye charit pavan param prakrit nar anurup. Prakrit nar anurup. O Ram, you come here on the earth planet and you do leelas just like an ordinary man would. In other words, your actions look ordinary to an ordinary person. But they're not. Kiye charita pavana param. Your actions are supremely purifying. Soi guna gai bhagat bhavatarahi kripa sindhu janahit tanudharahi. By singing those leelas and remembering those leelas, your devotees cross this ocean of maya because they're supremely purifying. They purify the heart. And simply by remembering these leelas, a devotee can cross the ocean of maya and attain God's divine love. So that is how we should take the leelas, that they're that great, they have the power to do that. And we shouldn't intellectualize them. We should take them at face value and simply bring them in our heart and see what do we get in here when we lovingly remember those leelas, faithfully remember them. And if we have a curiosity about why this happened or how this happened, we can get that question answered when we get to Krishna's level. See, Krishna performs all of his leelas with his yoga maya shakti. Aghatita ghatana patiyasi. This yoga maya shakti gives Sri Krishna the power to do anything. Karmanyani hasya bhavo bhavasyate Durga shrayo thari bhayat palayanam Kalatmano yat pramadayuta shraya Swatmanrate khidyati dhirvidaniha. This is from the Bhagavatam. And Brahma is saying, Kidyati dhir. Even the greatest intellectual, the greatest scholar, if he tries to analyze your actions, Krishna, Kidyati, his intellect fails in that task. Why? Because you perform all your actions through yoga maya. See, through Yoga Maya, he can do ulta karma. Karmanya nihasya bhavo bhavasyate. It means, Krishna, you have no desire, yet you are performing karma. It's ulta. We souls, we don't perform any karma without a desire. Prayojana manuddishya mandopi na pravartate. Darshan Shastra says, no one does anything without some aim in mind. So you have a desire, and according to that desire, you do your action, because you want to get something. But, O Krishna, Brahma says, you have no desires, yet we see you performing karma. You do so many actions, you create the universe. You take avatar, you do so many things while you're here. You got married to 16,108 queens, had 10 children with each of them. Why are you doing all of this? Fighting Mahabharat war? You have no desire of your own, yet you're doing all this karma. So Brahma says, khidyati. If someone tries to understand it, they can't. You are unborn and eternal. You were never born, you have existed forever, Krishna. You are Adi Purush. Tamekam Govindam Satchidananda Vigraham, Ved says, and Brahma says in his Brahma Sanghita that Govindam, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. You are Adi Purush, O Govinda, Krishna. Everything came from you. You didn't come from anyone. So you are Aj. Yet we call you Nandalal. Yashoda Nandan. You are the loving son of Nanda Baba and Yashoda. You are Devaki Nandan. You are Vasudev, the son of Vasudev. So how can it be both ways? How can you both be unborn and eternal and born from your mother and father? A material intellect can't understand. You are Kalatma. Kal means Yamraj, death. You are his Atma, meaning you are the Lord of the God of death. Death himself trembles before you. Yet you ran away from Jarasand. Just a little demon. What's the big deal? You're God. And he's just one demon. You ran away from him, leaving Mathura behind, and ran all the way with your brother Balaram. Both of you ran all the way to Dwarika, and you didn't even stop when you got to the coast. You went out on the island and made yourself a whole new city and kingdom out there, and never went back to Mathura. Why? Because of Jarasandh. So you are the Lord of the God of death, yet you feared a lowly demon. You are Atmaram Purnakam. You're self-content. It means you feel happy in and of yourself. Yet you are seen to be doing ras with the gopis, getting married to the queens in Dwarika. So these two situations don't go together, yet they do because of Yoga Maya Shakti. Yoga Maya allows two opposite situations to exist simultaneously, which is not possible in this world. In this world, if someone has a desire, then they will do something. If someone they have a desire, they'll get married and have kids. If someone has no desires, like Shri Krishna, how could he get married? Why would he do ras? So we don't have Yoga Maya, therefore we can't understand. We do all of our actions with Maya Shakti. Krishna does all of his actions with Yoga Maya Shakti. So the two can't be compared. That's why we say, oh Prahlad, he was God realized at the age of 7, and after that he became king, got married and had children. It's not possible, not after God realization. No, because he would have been fully content and satisfied. What need would he have had to become king, get married, had children? He would have had no need. Then why did he do it? That why cannot be answered to a person who does not have Yoga Maya Shakti. We have Maya Shakti, so everything we do is conditioned by that. Prahlad was God realized, so he had Yoga Maya Shakti. So he could do all of that without having any worldly desire whatsoever. No lust, no desire, no greed, yet he ruled for thousands, millions of years. So that is possible through Yoga Maya Shakti, and all of Shri Krishna's actions are done through Yoga Maya Shakti. So although we cannot understand them intellectually until we get to that level and he gives us Yoga Maya Shakti when we become God realized, yet we can still benefit from those leelas if we take them in the right way. If we take them faithfully without analyzing them, we just meditate on them and lovingly remember them, then we receive the benefit of heart purification and the bhakti starts growing in our heart. And that's the path that we follow until our heart is fully purified. And then we'll be able to get two things. The ultimate unlimited bliss of those leelas, will actually experience that upon God realization. Until then, we're like getting a little glimpse of that. That's growing, but it's still not the totality of it. And we'll get the knowledge. We'll actually understand. Although at that point, we won't care to understand because we'll be drowned in the bliss of Shri Krishna's leelas. So, in the last 1 week series last year when I was here, I actually did cover Shri Krishna's appearance. I had explained that Shri Krishna appeared in the jail cell in Kansa's dungeon in front of Devaki and Vasudev. Before he actually manifested his body and appeared physically before them, he had entered into Devaki and Vasudev. Before that, there was no embryo inside. I explained all of this last time. If you had taken an ultrasound of Devaki's belly, you would not have seen little Krishna growing in there. Using his Yoga Maya Shakti, he manipulated the space or the air inside Devaki's stomach, inside her belly, so that she felt and experienced everything that a normal mother would experience in a normal pregnancy, except no discomfort. But she actually, her belly got bigger and bigger and bigger, and she could feel like there's a baby moving inside. Then, when it was almost time for Shri Krishna's appearance, then he impregnated Devaki's mind with his divine bliss, you can say. And also entered into Vasudevji's mind. And people could see, the guards could see, oh, they're glowing. Something is going to happen. So at that time, it's called Garbhastuti. Brahma, Shiva, the celestial gods, they came and they worshipped Krishna. They sang his praises. Then they left, and after that time, Shri Krishna appeared in his full-grown form. He wasn't born as a little baby, he appeared in his full-grown form before Devaki and Vasudev. So then they also prayed to him, praised him. And then Devaki said to him, Upasanghara Vishvatman Nadoru Pamalaukikam. Please become a little baby. You're already full grown. I haven't even got to experience having you as my little baby, my little boy yet. So I don't want you to come to me in this full grown form. I want you to become like a little baby. Krishna did that. He became a little baby, just like a newborn baby in Devaki's lap. And then out of the fear that Kansa would come and kill this baby as he had the first six. The seventh, of course, Balaram, had been transferred by Yoga Maya Shakti into Rohini's womb, and he appeared there in Braj. Rohini was staying with Nanda Baba and Yashoda already. So Krishna was the eighth child of Devaki and Vasudev, and out of fear of Kansa, Vasudev wanted to get Krishna out of there. So Yogamaya Shakti again arranged the situation, made the guards fall asleep. The chains that were the fetters, the bonds that were holding Vasudev, they just released. The locks of the jail opened, and Vasudev put young baby Shri Krishna in a basket and just walked out. Just like nothing, just walked out of the jail. All the guards were asleep, all the doors opened for him. It was raining, pouring down rain outside, a terrible storm. And when he got to Yamuna, of course it was August, which is the flood season, rainy season. So Yamuna was overflowing her banks. Yet, Yogamaya Shakti created a path. Actually, what happened, Sheshnag came and protected Krishna from above, keeping the rain off of him. And then Yamuna, after getting a little touch of Krishna's foot, then went down and gave away, let Vasudevji cross Yamuna. And he went in the night like that to the house of Nanda Baba and Yashoda, and finding Yashoda asleep with a baby beside her, that baby was actually Yogamaya in personal form. So Vasudevji left baby Krishna there and took Yogamaya back with him. Now Yashoda had been, because her mind was also absorbed in the divine bliss, she had felt like, oh, my pregnancy is over. Although, again, Yogamaya was not born like a normal baby either. But she just felt like, oh, now there's a child beside me. My child is born. But she was just half asleep, half awake. She didn't know, is it a girl, is it a boy? So when Vasudevji made the change, it was all the same for Yashoda. When she woke up in the morning, she just saw, oh, I had a baby boy. And he took Yogamaya back with him and crossed Yamuna, went into the jail, and all the doors closed behind him. His bonds came back, the chains came back on his ankle. The guards woke up, and then they saw that, oh, the baby's born. So then when Kans came to kill that baby, then Yogamaya showed her true form. She flew up in the air and told Kans, you're a real fool. The one that you're afraid of, the eighth child of Devaki and Vasudev, he's already appeared in Braj. So your death is imminent. So Kans was so afraid, and then Yogamaya just disappeared into the sky. And then in Gokul, the night passed and Yashoda woke up in the morning and found that, oh, my child is born. And there was baby Krishna lying there. So that morning, the news spread so fast that Nanda and Yashoda have had a baby boy. And that baby boy is our beloved Shri Krishna. Because all the residents of Braj were not ordinary villagers. They had all come ahead of Shri Krishna. Meaning when Radha and Krishna decided to descend on the earth planet, it wasn't like a last minute thing. Oh, want to go on the earth planet? Sure, let's go. Yeah, let's go. No, it was pre-planned. They knew at this particular time, at the end of Dwapar Yug, we're going to go on the earth planet. So they had sent many, many millions of their saints on the earth planet ahead of them. So the Gwalbals, who grew up with Krishna, they were saints from the divine world who came here on the earth planet, either ahead of Krishna or at around the same time, and they grew up with him. Their parents, the Gopis and Gopis of Braj, they had come ahead of time. So there were generations of saints populating Braj in anticipation, waiting for Shri Krishna to come. So then they heard, oh, Krishna is born to Mother Yashoda. So the news spread so fast all over Braj. Everybody heard about it and everybody wanted to come. So Nanda Baba that morning, he woke up. He saw, he was so happy because he and Yashoda were already quite aged. So they had basically just thought that, oh, I guess we won't have another child. We won't have a child. You know, Rohini had already given birth to Balaram. And they thought, I guess we'll just be childless. So at that age, to have a child, it was such a great thing. They were so happy. So Nandaji, he went, had his bath, got dressed in his best clothes, and he called thousands of Brahmins to come, because you have to perform all the auspicious ceremonies. So they came and they were doing swasti vachan, they were singing all the auspicious verses of Vedas, and they did jata karma sanskar, the rites and rituals you have to do when a child is born. So you can see, you know, there was such a big scene there, even before everybody else started arriving. Nanda Baba gave away 200,000 cows to those Brahmins and 7 huge piles of sesame seeds that he had wrapped very nicely in beautiful cloth. So all of this was going on, and the rest of the residents of Braj, they were of course thinking, well, we don't want to miss out. So they were quickly getting ready. The Gwals, the grown men, they got dressed in their best clothes, you know, put on their best dhoti, put on a long coat to look nice and formal, put on a pagri. Before leaving their house, everybody went, you know, swept the gate area, swept the angan, swept everything inside the house, bathed their cows and bulls and calves, and then smeared, they have like a tel and haldi mixture, so they smeared that, rubbed that into the cows as an auspicious thing to do, and then decorated them with some red clay. They get the natural thing you can get from the ground, ochre, and made nice designs on the cows, and then put nice, beautiful, you know, some material covering them. And even they put some peacock feathers here and there, decorating the cows, and used gold chains for the fetters of the cows. So they were all decorated. The gopis got dressed in their best clothes, got all ready to go and meet Shri Krishna. Everybody filled their arms with gifts for Nanda, Yashoda, and Shri Krishna. And they just ran. It's said that the gopis were running. They were in such a hurry to get there. And they were, you know, their kundal of their ears were jiggling, and their malas were jiggling, and they had braids. And in their braid of their hair, they had put flowers, so they were in such a hurry. Even their braid was getting loosened and the flowers were coming out. Everybody was rushing to go have the darshan of Shri Krishna. So they arrived there, and everybody was, you can imagine the crowd going on there. There were, you know, people performing, playing dundubhi, playing bhairi, playing horns, playing on big drums. There were dance troops. There were, you know, troops singing, performing. It was such a great, loud, festive occasion. So the gopis came and offered their presents. The gopis came and offered their presents. Everybody came and had darshan of Shri Krishna. The men were so happy, they started taking milk, dahi, water, ghee, makhan, and they just started throwing it on each other, like it was holy, you can say. Throwing it on each other, smearing it in each other's faces. The gopis had like some water with some chandan mixed in, and they were just going and sprinkling that on everybody. So you can imagine, inside the big, huge house of Nanda and Yashoda, outside the house, everywhere around, just people milling around, some coming in to get darshan of baby Krishna, some having gotten darshan, coming out, people throwing dahi and makhan on each other, throwing water on each other, everybody singing, dancing, enjoying the festival of Shri Krishna's birthday celebration. So this was the scene that very first morning that Krishna had come to Braj. So from that morning forth, for every day that Shri Krishna was in Braj, you can say that that festival never ended. The joy, the festivities just went on. The leelas changed, but that sense of excitement that everybody had in Braj, that went on from the day Krishna appeared through all of his leelas. So, after that, a few days after Shri Krishna's appearance, Nanda Babaji, he had to go to Mathura to give the tax, the yearly tax to Kans. And while he was away in Mathura, something amazing and almost terrible happened in Braj while Nandaji was away. So what that was that happened on the sixth day after Shri Krishna was born, I'll tell you tomorrow, as well as the other leelas that came after that.